org. Thank you for listening. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Personnel Committee will meet on the second Monday of each month at 6 p.m.
Join KABU and Kofallin Cultural Center on Thursday, June 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater for an evening of storytelling, live music, and film. Malian artist, author, and storyteller Baba Wage-Jakite starts with a talk on the background of the Empire of Mali and the role of West Africa's oral historians before the screening of Keita, Heritage of the Griots, a film which blends modern events with magical realism, mythology, and history. Again, that's an evening of the culture of Mali, including the screening of the film Keita, Heritage of the Griots, on Thursday, June 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Portland.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. I want to talk about the recent Supreme Court decision. I'll get around to it in a minute. I recently returned from a trip to Mexico. Been gone a few weeks, and I'm glad to be back here broadcasting. I learned many things, and one of them, for example, is that the homelessness experienced in the United States is not and cannot be the ineluctable result of poverty, because Mexico is vastly poorer. And yet they did not have anything like the homelessness that we have here. It's a matter of culture. Capitalism is certainly the dominant paradigm there as well, but they do not obey it so abjectly as to deny people a place to stay, by and large. Here, the mind of the populace seems to be occupied by cruel and domineering demons that say things even to reasonable people like, they should have made better choices. Bring up our national crime of enforcing homelessness, and the demon speaks from the most unexpected mouths. No horror movie ever envisioned this. I want to go to headlines. Family and co-workers of the immigrants arrested by Immigration and Customs Enforcement and Customs and Border Protection described Tuesday's raids in northern Ohio, the largest so far of the Trump era, as military style, SWAT style, and a nightmare. The coordinated raids targeted workers at the Corso's Flower and Garden Center nurseries in Castalia and neighboring Sandusky. The World Socialist World Socialist website spoke yesterday with children whose parents were arrested, co-workers whose close friends are gone, and young husbands who were separated from their wives. And this is indeed from the World Socialist site. It's wsws.org. This is an article by Eric London and Will Morrow, published today. Witnesses described a scene of total criminality. Mercedes, a Corso's worker, said they came with donuts. They got all of us into the same area, telling us they were officials doing a routine inspection. When we all gathered, they encircled us and took the badges out. They had dogs, helicopters, assault rifles, and helmets. We were all crying, end quote. Another source told the WSWS that some agents were disguised as construction workers. Nearby residents said that they could hear the raid from their homes. Other witnesses said workers who are U.S. citizens denounced immigration agents at the scene, yelling at them and imploring them to stop. Workers said immigration officials detained several U.S. citizen workers to prevent them from calling co-workers and warning them about the raid. Agents also reportedly ordered documented immigrant workers to bring their passports to work from now on. The workers said they would do no such thing. I'd like to say good on them. And you can find that article at WSWS.org. I think I may read a bit more of it, skip ahead, but I want to say this. This is red meat, the way this is being done. The INS, which has always historically been a racist agency, you may recall the disgusting and humiliating racism that was exposed at the Portland airport just a few years ago by INS officers, which is now ICE. It's red meat, and you probably know a Trump supporter. So I want you to rub their nose in this. I want you to point to them. I want you to find a Trump supporter. I want you to say, look how you're being fascistized. Look how you're being given these little spectacles so that your glee will be increased, so that your Klan hood will start slipping on when you're not expecting it. I want you to be merciless to a Trump supporter about this. An untold number of children, they write, are now parentless. Jerry, an 18-year-old U.S. citizen whose mother was taken in the raid, is now responsible for his younger sister and brother, aged 9 and 12. Jerry was quoted saying, "When I received that call, I rushed over to Corso's to see my mom. I couldn't. I was detained. An agent told me to pull over. He handcuffed me and wouldn't let me see my mom. I saw the bus she was in. It was 20 feet away, but it had tinted windows, and I couldn't see in. I'm thinking that my mom saw me, but I couldn't see her. It was a horrible experience that no one should experience. Just because my mom is an illegal immigrant trying to support her family in this country, it's horrible. They treated them like they're worthless. I saw officers with assault rifles, dogs, and helicopters everywhere," end quote. Again, this is the spectacle, speaking for myself. These raids have not resulted in any need to use, generally not to use firearms at all, but certainly not assault rifles, certainly not dogs and helicopters. This is a fascist spectacle. We are being shoved further and further to the right as a society. We're getting used to this, and that's how it works. One third of the population is turned against another third of the population, while a third of the population is too frightened to do anything about it. That's how fascism takes over. This is fascism. And there's quite a bit to the article. It's on WSWS.org. Please read it. I was watching CNN earlier this week. It's a little indulgence I do. I want to see what they're doing. I'm used to their impeachment porn, of course, and used to them, well, falling on their face journalistically and going right into sycophancy and stenographerism whenever it comes to imperialism. But I was watching, with a broad feeling of tolerance, Tom Hanks, broadcast of 1968. So I was, you know, not particularly caring that it was corporate nonsense, but it got to me ere long. There's so many points of propaganda in it that I scarcely know where to start. So I'll just point out that it is grotesquely false and irresponsible to present the assassination of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. as an unfortunate incident caused by a lone gunman. Quoting the press conference by Coretta Scott King, following the successful conclusion of the King family's civil trial in 1999, yeah, all those years ago, to prove the assassination conspiracy, quote, "The jury affirmed overwhelming evidence that identified someone else, not James Earl Ray, as the shooter, and that Mr. Ray was set up to take the blame," end quote. And it is obvious from the known facts. It will be obvious to you when you pull this up and read the official transcript from the trial that, yes, someone else was there and someone else shot and someone else was evidently Army Special Forces as coordinated with elements of the U.S. secret police organizations, FBI, etc., in collaboration with the Memphis Police Department. The trial focused on Lloyd Jowers, who claimed that he had arranged this assassination for the mob and that his killer had succeeded even as the Special Forces closed in, and there were quite a few of them, to kill. But that is an obvious red herring. And these days, I'm not sure if people know what a red herring is. It's a distraction. It's a near truth or an untruth presented to take you away from the actual truth. It's perfectly clear, though, that James Earl Ray was a patsy and that the U.S. government wanted King dead. That's the story. That's history. And failing to tell that tale and failing to frame it as a government assassination is participating in the Jim Crow mass incarceration, apartheid, racist mythology that we all live in. So shame on you, Tom Hanks, for participating in the big lie technique. The same goes for the pretense that Robert F. Kennedy could be shot only from in front and show two entry wounds from behind his back. 9 to 13 shots were supposed to have been issued from an 8-shot revolver. That, too, was an assassination from the government. And I heard on the preceding program reference to Gary Webb, a similar talent, being able to shoot himself twice in the head. Not an easy thing to do. I'd say try it sometime, but 1968 was a year that showed that we all live under a monster government that will do absolutely anything to prevent the outbreak of democracy and a move to the left. It was the year that KBOO received an FCC license and began what initially seemed to be an innocuous set of classical music broadcasts. It was because of the events of 1968 and subsequent years that KBOO would inexorably move to the left and move to a far broader mission. And it's because of imperialist lackeys like Tom Hanks, that I broadcast the news you're not supposed to know. Time is 10 minutes after the top of the hour. This is Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know on KBOO Portland. We'll turn your attention to articles in the British press. And I'll use this as This Week in Whiteness, although obviously we've gotten off on a good start with that. The Guardian. The Guardian, which is pretty useless when it comes to British or U.S. imperialism, has been running excellent articles on the oppression of people of color in the United States, and particularly of Black Americans. And they have several articles under that aegis. Pull up theguardian.co.uk, or I think it's The Guardian. If you just put Guardian, you'll get the wrong thing. I think it's theguardian.com in the U.S. Either way, you'll get it. They have an article by Ed Pilkington, an excerpt, 40 million Americans live in poverty. More than 5 million eke out an existence amid the kind of absolute deprivation normally associated with the developing world. The symptoms of such glaring inequality include Americans now live shorter and sicker lives than the citizens of other rich democracies. Tropical diseases that flourish in conditions of poverty on the rise. U.S. incarceration rate remains the highest in the world. Voter registration levels are among the lowest in industrialized nations. And against that backdrop, the U.N. rapporteur identifies a slew of what he calls aggressively regressive policies coming out of the Trump administration that are sending the country full steam ahead towards greater inequality. And of course, all of those economic statistics apply double and triple to people of color. In addition to tax breaks, he writes, there are new work requirements for welfare recipients. I'm having a little trouble with my readout. So if you'll excuse me for a moment, I'm going to try to bring up what should have printed properly, but did not. And fortunately, I have my backup computer here, and I will try to get to that text, because there was more headlines. And I'm sorry, I misread where I was at, and I'm going to give you the update This Week in Whiteness in just a moment from The Guardian, as I was saying. But first, another headline item. Al Jazeera reports that the UN Security Council has rejected a draft U.S. draft resolution on Gaza. The United States has voted against a Kuwait-drafted United Nations Security Council resolution calling for the protection of Palestinian civilians, while being the only country to back its own measure, condemning Hamas for the recent violence in the Gaza Strip. More than 120 Palestinians have been killed and thousands wounded by Israeli forces during weeks-long peaceful protests in the besieged Gaza Strip near the fence with Israel. Among the victims have been medical professionals and journalists. 10 countries, including Russia and France, voted in favor of the Kuwait-sponsored resolution on Friday. 4 others, Britain, Poland, the Netherlands, and Ethiopia, abstained, while the U.S., a major ally of Israel, was the only country to vote against it. The resolution, which was revised 3 times and said to have been watered down, previously called for international protection for the Palestinian people. The final draft called for the consideration of measures to guarantee the safety and protection of the Palestinian civilian population in the occupied Palestinian territories, including in the Gaza Strip. U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Nikki Haley described the resolution as grossly one-sided as she pinned the blame on much of the Palestinian suffering on the Hamas movement, which runs the Strip. In a statement later on Friday, Hanan Ashrawi, Palestinian Liberation Organization Executive Committee member, said the U.S. had once again demonstrated its blind loyalty to Israel and tried to absolve it of any wrongdoing despite its egregious violations, deliberate massacres, and willful killings and war crimes. More of that article at aljazeera.com. As you probably have heard, the Supreme Court decided 7-2 earlier this week to overturn the victory of 2 Colorado gay men who had been refused a baking service for their wedding. The Colorado Civil Rights Commission had decided that, in refusing to bake an ordinary unmarked cake for the men, purely in order to reject their homosexuality, the bakery had violated their civil rights. The clear implication of the Supreme Court in reversing that decision is that religious expression now extends to the imposition of religious beliefs. As Ruth Bader Ginsburg pointed out in her dissent, the cake in question had no requested signs or markings. It was just an ordinary cake denied on the basis of bigotry. And the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, whose decision was overturned via the appeals court in Colorado, was accurate in comparing that objection to the objections of segregationists. This is a terrible blow to equality. The demurrals that the justice wrote into the text of the majority decision are simply that. They are specious and will have little effect. There will be an effect, however, and there is an effect, and that is the emboldenment of bigots and bigotry. In my discussions of this decision on social media, I have found that many, or perhaps most, Americans have decided that the decision was an effort to uphold heterosexuality as exclusively normal. The majority justice's opinion certainly shows a tender regard versus offending the feelings of followers of America's dominant religion, but there is a general assumption that the bakery in question was asked to make some intentionally inflammatory product. And so the argument on that fallacy goes that no one should be required to humiliate themselves by producing an artistic statement in contravention to their beliefs. Well, who could argue with that? But then that it was merely a blank cake, as I said, and as Ruth Bader Ginsburg has pointed out. And so that is a straw man argument. You can beat up that straw man, and you're not doing anything. The real precedent is indeed a victory for bigots. It's particularly disturbing to see the language referring to the blank cake as comparable to an artistic expression. It's as if there was a collective decision by the majority of the justices to ignore the facts. 7-2. Incredible. It's also disturbing to me to see so many cis, straight journalists and analysts who refer to this as a narrow decision. And, it's not a narrow decision. It is a poisonous decision. What matters, Ginsburg wrote in her dissent, quote, is that Phillips, meaning the baker, would not provide a good or service to a same-sex couple that he would provide to a heterosexual couple, end quote. Now, consider that quote for a moment. And try, please, in your mind, to unframe it from the popular misconception that this was about some inflammatory statement being written on a cake. And indeed, the majority of justices added to that misconception by basing their decision on an irrelevant fact. And this is what Ginsburg points out. And I do urge you to read Ginsburg's dissent as well as the actual full decision. The First Amendment prohibits the establishment of a state religion and also prohibits the creation of a law that stops the free expression of religion, but the bakery in question has not in any way been forced to recant their religion, nor to act in any but an even-handed way. Their business was not located within an exclusive religious enclave. It serves the public. It therefore follows, since the decision does not limit itself to baked products, and any Christian may refuse any service to a gay, lesbian, bi, trans, queer, curious, or non-binary person. For that matter, I suppose they could obey other scriptural strictures and refuse service to menstruating women or to anyone eating shrimp or clams or to those who wear mixed fibers in their clothing, anyone who offends their sense of religiosity. A Christian-owned hotel may now refuse service to GLBTQ persons since it would offend their tender feelings to do otherwise. And when I say they may now refuse, I don't mean that the laws have been specifically struck down. I mean that if they challenge those laws, they now have precedent. And for example, a clockable trans person like myself may therefore be refused a coffee or service at a restaurant or an apartment rental or even entry to a hospital on the basis of this decision. Sure, I could point to the civil rights of 1964 in challenging my challenged status, but any U.S. court at any level up to the Supreme Court may now respond stare decisis. The decision stands. And the bigots, you may be sure, can feel that in their bones. This is a situation in which the Supreme Court made a bizarre decision and the corporate media encouraged what was evidently the intent of the majority of justices to obfuscate what they had actually done. This is a terrible decision. Okay, I said I was going to get around to This Week in Whiteness, and I was referring to the articles in Guardian, guardian.co.uk, and here's some examples of what they've written. The 21st century is, in fact, littered with the bodies of black votes. In the 2000 presidential election, in which George W. Bush won in the Sunshine State by 537 ballots, Florida kept African Americans from the polls or ensured that their votes would never be added to the state's tally. The policing was multi-tentacled. On election day, there were faulty voting machines, purged voter rolls, purges that targeted minorities, and locked gates at polling places that should have been opened. There was also a Florida Highway Patrol checkpoint at the only road leading to the polls in key heavily black precincts in Jacksonville. Sound familiar? And returning to the text, then there were the piles of ballots, especially in counties with large minority populations left uncounted. The U.S. Civil Rights Commission concluded that of the 179,855 ballots invalidated by Florida officials, 53% were cast by black voters. In Florida, the commission's report continued, a black citizen was 10 times as likely to have a vote rejected as a white voter, end quote. And speaking for myself, that is not a mistake. It's not an error. It's not an outlier. And returning to the text, that targeting of African Americans was just as egregious in North Carolina after the U.S. Supreme Court gutted the necessary protection of the Voting Rights Act in 2013. The catalyst for North Carolina's assault was simple. Black people had dared access their 15th Amendment rights. Since 2000, African American voter registration had increased by 51.1% in the state, and blacks also had a higher voter turnout rate than white registered voters in both the 2008 and 2012 presidential elections. Effective black access to that public space, the voting booth, triggered, as a federal court noted, a targeting of African American voters with almost surgical precision. Much more to that article. Let me skip to another one. Again, this is in The Guardian. .co.uk, it seems as though every day the list grows, waiting in a coffee shop while black, selling real estate while black, moving in while black, napping while black, working out while black. Ever since a Starbucks in the Philadelphia area came under national scrutiny for calling the police on two black men waiting for a business associate in one of the company's coffee shops, new attention has been focused on the long list of mundane activities that black Americans can't confidently engage in without being treated as suspicious or having the police called. It's just part of daily living. That's a quote of Jeff Chang, author of Who We Be, A Cultural History of Race in Post-Civil Rights America. He said, it's what you expect as a person of color when you head out the door in the morning. A moment like this just sort of galvanized folks to be able to express all different ways in which they have been impacted by daily racism, end quote. In many ways, they write, the newly energized conversation parallels how Black Lives Matter emerged as an ideological clearinghouse for the problem of racialized police violence several years ago. Neither phenomenon was new, but in both cases, a stream of high-profile incidents managed to snowball into its own trope, in part thanks to social media and smartphone videos. In this case, that's the trope of everyday racism. Again, speaking for myself, this trove of articles in The Guardian and their ongoing series is very valuable and is not to be found in the U.S. press, not to be found at the level of status or circulation of The Guardian. And it is very, very necessary. And the victory of the Trump racists, the 63 million Americans who got their president in despite the 66 million votes of the people who weren't as racist, is being consolidated daily by these INS raids, by Trump stunts like the his targeting of black NFL players for their peaceful protest. And this is intended to it's intended to create that glimmer in the eye that you can see in a white racist when they talk about Trump and about their victory, that glee, that degenerate sense of mob violence is being exacerbated, and people's worst tendencies are being grown, are being farmed, are being expanded. And that tumor is moving rapidly into the body politic. It must be opposed daily, constantly, loudly, because we still have the opportunity to oppose it with nonviolence. We are moving rapidly towards a civil war. Consider what will happen when Robert Mueller finally confronts Trump with the evidence, and the nation with the evidence of Trump's collusion with the Russian government and with his attempts to obstruct justice, that latter part being even more clear. And when Trump says that this should be ignored, that he should not be impeached, consider what happens when Congress fails to impeach him, as I suspect they will. That will be the end of checks and balances, and we'll have a decision to make. And I would argue that that decision is to contact, as Trump surely will, the armed forces. We do not need a majority of the armed forces to make a credible case that a violence may come that must be avoided. I'm looking forward ahead, not forward in sense of enjoying, looking ahead to where we are going. I'm trying to say that we are heading for the civil war. And we can speak now, and we can find our allies within the government, within the armed forces, and we can demand their loyalty to the Constitution, or Trump will foreclose on that, and we will lose the last of our access to democratic rights. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland, and coming up, more left discussion with Per Fogring, and much more in the what we used to call the radio zine here on KBOO, now 50 years old officially. We passed that last Sunday, had a wonderful party, and the Fuzzy Boo was here, the Diablo was here with his bike and his little broadcasting system right from his bike, and we rode our bikes around, had a great time, and maybe I saw you there. And we'd like to thank you for supporting KBOO. I know that you'll continue to do so. We, as I've mentioned before, we have had a hell of a challenge with a very sophisticated and persistent hack that cut into the online half of our revenues. And we still need your increased support as we struggle onward. And I'm glad to say that this radio station is still here and still thriving. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Stay tuned for Per Fogring going out to you via KBOO 90.7 FM in Cascadia, other frequencies nearby, and via KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Village Building Convergence, taking place June 1st through 10th at locations all over Portland. The Village Building Convergence features over 30 community-built projects happening all over Portland, including the Mudbone Community Farm, Sherritt Square, and Portland University. Additionally, there are also ticketed evening events featuring speakers and local musicians. Again, that's the Village Building Convergence, taking place June 1st through 10th at locations all over Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fargring. Show is Fight the Empire. Today we're going to kind of look far back in the past and as far ahead in the future as we can. I suppose a lot of it's common knowledge now that the gas you put in your car the other day was refined from oil that nature formed millions of years ago. And in the ancient times, oil, petroleum, it wasn't petroleum, then just sort of oil and tar kind of bubbled up from the ground in various places. I don't know how many of you have ever been to L.A. to see the La Brea Tar Pits. It's like this big black pool of tar by the museum there. But back in the ancient days, 4,000 years ago, asphalt was used in the building the walls of Babylon. The Chinese were able to refine petroleum in a modest way, and they